Podcasting is a complicated profession, which is why we're here to discuss Ahsoka, currently airing on Disney+. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined, as always, by my co-hosts and your Star Wars pals. Tony Sindelar is here. Hi, Tony.
Hello, nerds. That's all of you.
Kat Benish is also here. Hi, Kat.
Hello, everyone. Dan and I do something a little different. We are no longer podcasting in the same room, which is our usual format, because I have COVID and I'm quarantining from the family. So we're going to try extra hard to make sure this crosstalk tonight.
Yeah, extra crosstalk. That's what the people requested. That's what we will deliver. We are here to discuss part six of Ahsoka, Far, Far Away, a phrase I feel I've heard somewhere before. We'll do a recap, we'll discuss some stuff, and we'll get to your letters, because there are many of them. So the cold open of this is basically Ahsoka and Hu Yang talking about Sabine while traveling by whale through hyperspace, and then it's off-screen story time as Hu Yang prepares to tell some tale that he told the younglings in the Jedi Temple.
I kind of was expecting him to tell the tale of essentially whatever Balin's skull is there for.
I really wanted it to be like the, have you ever heard the tale of Darth Plagueis the Wise? And then cut, smash cut.
Well, isn't there even there's a joke in there about where it's like there were like the three chapters to it, but and the first one's the best. I thought that was like a backhanded prequel joke. Or is it an original trilogy?
Original joke, yeah.
Ooh. Yeah, well, because is it the order in which they happen, or the order in which they were told?
It's also, well, I mean, Dave Filoni wrote this, and he notably has soft spots for the like prequels and stuff, obviously, having worked on Clone Wars, so hard to tell with him.
Yeah. Yeah, if Dave Filoni hates Star Wars, he has built himself real horrible.
The prison of his own making.
Yeah, he's like, why do I do this to myself? The only thing I hate more than Star Wars is myself and these hats. I buy these hats.
I can't stop
Dave Filoni wears a lot of cowboy hats. Are they cowboy hats?
Yeah, they're cowboy hats. They're definitely cowboy hats.
And not metaphorical hats, but like actual hats.
Yeah.
This raises the question, where's Dave Filoni from? Is he from a place where cowboy hats are commonly worn? He's from those Pennsylvania.
I think they're like made out of leather, so they're not cowboy hats.
They're not quite indie hats either.
Yeah.
So, though, I will contrast you guys. So we used to all play in the same Frisbee team together. Mm-hmm. And one of our Frisbee players, we will call Abby, her husband, I believe, is also from that area, and he often wears
similar hats, which is why I was going to just say they're just nerd hats.
he is from Mount Lebanon, Pennsylvania, a suburb of Pittsburgh, so firmly in the Midwest.
Pittsburgh is not the Midwest.
It's a long-running joke. It's a long-running reference to a thing. I can explain it to you. It won't make you feel any better about anything. And it would have taken less time for me to explain it than for me to explain that I could explain it. So I won't.
Someone once tried to tell me that Chicago wasn't the Midwest. I was like, that is categorically not true.
It's the capital of the Midwest.
Was that person from Michigan? People from Michigan are real mixed up about the Midwest.
Iowa or Indiana. Like, no, that's the big city. That's like liberals relocated. It's like, no, guys, it's still the Midwest.
It's still the Midwest.
Geographically, it's the Midwest.
That's a real Michigas.
Yeah. All right. Dan's moving us along.
What are we doing again?
Yeah. Episode six.
Back on the Eye of Sion, which has arrived in Peridia. We get.
I thought it was Peridia.
Peridia? Peridia? I thought they said Peridia.
Peridia sounds more fantasy, I guess. Peridia.
Sure. We arrive and Sabine is in custody, and there's a bunch of back and forth as to whether or not Balin's going to keep his part of this deal.
Lot of knowledge drops, world building, which some of which I have questions about, but I don't know if I get to ask those questions now or later in the podcast. Yeah.
I would do it now.
Yeah, sure.
Why not?
So Peridia, we learn, is the ancient homeworld of Elsbeth's people, the Dathomiri, which is strange to me because it is called
the Dathomir? Dathomiri?
Dathomiri.
Dathomiri.
Is that real?
The people of Dathomir.
As mentioned in the episode.
Which is confusing. Mainly it's confusing to me that, so the Dathomiri are from Peridia, but not from Dathomir.
Well, I like to think of it as like a translation thing, right?
Okay.
So in the Dathomir language, it's called Paridia, but they now, over time, it's like they're associated with, instead, Dathomir.
Or.
By the way, the Night Sisters are back. Can we just stop?
We haven't even gotten there
awesome
yet.
Awesome, the Night Sisters are back, because I got so annoyed they get killed off, essentially, in what show?
In Clone Wars.
Clone Wars.
Yeah. But they're the coolest parts. They're so cool. They're the Fates. They're awesome. Let's talk more about them.
And we got all over this even before I got to my point, counterpoint about Dathomir, which is that we know there are other creatures like Darth Maul who live on Dathomir. Mm. Is it possible the Dathomiri traveled through that galaxy, showed up, found a planet other people were living on, and then we're like, yeah, this planet's Dathomir because we're the Dathomiri. Eat it. Zabrax. Yeah.
Oh, that other planet was no good. We don't talk about that one anymore. I mean, amazing visuals in this episode. They take that kind of funky looking shuttle, which does not look like a thing we've seen before, and it goes down and lands on like just a giant obelisk. And I'm like, oh, there's no one here. No, there's people here. There's three night witches just hanging out in their own kind of parallel Stonehenge kind of thing. And I was like, whoa, okay.
They got a cool laser loom that they're making.
Yeah, that was very cool. Well, so Dan realized where we were watching, their names are essentially...
They're the Fates.
Mutations of the Fates, the Greek Fates.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, Clortho, Laxis, and Atropos. Mm. They're not quite that, but they are basically that. They may be
I got kind of a
Greek
weird
even.
Sisters vibe from them, too, from Macbeth. So, yeah.
Yes.
Which I get, those are, I think, inspired by the Fates,
probably
right?
A Fates crossover there. Yeah. I mean, you know, Shakespeare obviously knew his classics. So I think that's probably an influence.
Shakespeare steals from the best. Greek mythology.
Right. Yeah, people also just generally trust, like, three older wise women together. Yeah, people don't untrustworthy.
Should be noted.
Make people nervous.
One of those people.
Also, guys, I'm gonna say right now, we got to work on that crosstalk, and all of us we're getting really bad.
One of those three, I should note, played by Claudia Black, a veteran of many sci-fi franchises, including both Farscape and Stargate. Oh. Some good sci-fi DNA there. We meet them and they're like, yeah, Thrawn's coming. And then Thrawn decides
we came all the way here.
We came all the way here to meet a Thrawn.
Well, he's late because he wants to make an entrance, people.
So as a result, we then get a grand entrance by Grand Admiral Thrawn, in which he flies in his Star Destroyer at an appropriate dramatic moment when Sabine is trying to use a force to escape her prison cell.
Good fake out again. Really nice fake out.
There's some confusing stuff in here even before we get to Thrawn, where the Night Sisters don't like Sabine, who smells like a Jedi, yet no issues with Skull and Shin Hati, who are, I would suggest, several clicks higher on the Jedi scale than Sabine, but you know,
but they've renounced it, right? It's a matter of intent, so, I think, is the issue.
All they know is how these people smell, Dan. You smell like you have renounced the code.
Well, you smell like you trained in the Jedi Temple. There's like a lingering scent. Like everyone uses midichlorian body wash.
Yoda has a distinct odor. I'm just, you know.
It's fair.
Yeah, I do. I was wondering about that too. Definitely the idea that you disconnect, and we'll talk about it, I'm sure, later, but Baylan Skoll clearly has a different agenda. Like, we talked briefly about that in the last episode, but that was made very clear here, which was super interesting.
We delve further into his newsletter later in the episode.
So Thrawn appears with his Star Destroyer flying overhead. The Chimera, whose design was first shown in Rebels, which is a Star Destroyer with these like really wild intertwined dragons. I don't know exactly what they're Chimeras, I guess, on the bottom. It's also seen better days, clearly. A bunch of it's all beaten up and, he's been there for a while.
What we knew was also beat up. Is it the same Star Destroyer that leapt into the hyperspace with the Purgle?
Yes.
It was already in bad shape, right? Yep. That because the Purgle actually crushed a lot of it by the time it leaped. Again, I still don't understand. They did not have, when they made that original leap, they did not have essentially windshields, and yet they all survived.
Emergency
I have questions about how it works.
Not very many of them, though. I mean, I guess that I was, the visual of the Chimera appearing pretty impressive. And, you know, seeing this Star Destroyer that is still flying and does the classic right over the camera appearance, but is also the worst condition we've ever seen a Star Destroyer basically still flying in. Its rear engines are like all out. And to me, that kind of immediately answered the question of like, why has Thrawn not come back on his own before? Because he barely has a ship with which to do so.
Right. Yeah. So. Yeah. And he, we'll see some more about that in a moment when basically Thrawn shows up, makes his arrival, and decides to like basically, yeah, just be the Thrawniest Thrawn. Oh, I'm all calculating and everything.
And do you want to, more amazing visuals of his, I believe they're called Night Troopers.
Yes.
Let's talk about them for a while. So, no, super interesting visuals, right? Because they look like, again, their armor has been essentially taped together. And I read somewhere...
welded, someone, maybe, with gold, yeah.
Someone was... What's the Japanese red art form? A lot of it was red, but...
Kitsugi?
No, Kintsugi.
So essentially the idea of making something more beautiful after it has been broken, right?
Yeah.
But, again, Dan, I'm stealing over your thunder from stuff we talked about. But Tony...
Passing my work off as your own. It's fine.
No, I'm clearly giving you credit. So I've been wondering for a while, as they did the flip through at the opening of, like, Marok is given a image. It's like, why do they... When they flip through the droids and, like, Captain Phasma and everyone, I'm not sure if she's in or not. Marok's in there, like, Marok, like, he died episode 5. Why do you still have him? Dan's theory is that they're all zombies. Which I thought was like, that would then make sense why we spend so much time with Marok and showing Marok's death to show that that is a thing and can be done. I like that theory a lot, Dan.
They are also clearly, there's something weird about them, right?
There's something very weird.
They're doing these weird chants. They're chanting Thrawn's name. Like, they
we never see any of them. There's no other Imperial officers that's not wearing a helmet. We get the one who is clearly the lead one.
Enoch.
Enoch, who has the particularly kind of haunting thing where it looks like he's taken like a death mask out of a tomb and made that into part of his face, his helmet's face. And he's played by the guy
Wes Chatham, which I don't understand. They've got to have, if you have him, you're going to have to show us his face because he's a gorgeous actor.
Yeah, I mean, they do with the Dark Jedi and other villains, they do sometimes cover them all up, right? So, and we see, we finally get our live action Thrawn with Lars Mikkelsen playing Thrawn after voicing Thrawn from Rebels. And even he, I guess, to show us how bad things are, his white uniform's got some like some patchwork and stuff on it. And I guess I'm curious how people felt about the live action version of him, because I think I was a little underwhelmed, and I don't know if it's maybe if I was, you know, if this is what we're supposed to take away from kind of diminished Thrawn so much as I think I've struggled a little bit with a lot of the versions of characters that we've taken from animation and put in live action. For the non-human characters, it's tricky with kind of how human they then end up looking. I think about you know, in Obi-Wan, we saw the Grand Inquisitor, and I, you know, they had a guy playing him, and it was like, I kind of miss how not human shaped, like basically the skull of the animation version was,
the
right?
Same with Thrawn too, because there's a perfectness to the animation, which you don't get in live action. Live action necessarily, I think, has a sort of, you know, it's reality, so therefore it is a little bit imperfect. Yeah. So I don't think, in my head, I struggle with the fact that Thrawn, even when I first saw him in Rebels, did not look the way I had pictured him. And my picture of him being like a tiny 6-inch, you know, image on the top, on the front of Heir to the Empire or whatever. But I grew to really appreciate that depiction. But I think, you know, as I said to Kat, when we discussed this episode earlier this week, like, to me, what makes it is the voice. And that is the reason
is really
that
good.
Lars Mikkelsen is, you know, needs to be here and playing this character. I don't love the look. To me, he still looks like a blue Elon Musk, and I struggle with it.
So to be fair, Dan and I watched this on a iPhone screen under the covers while we were trying not to wake asleep, maybe in a hotel room. So like, it was a little hard to see the live action Thrawn. I had no issue with it, though. And fundamentally, adjusting from the Heir to the Empire, but I think this versus the animated Rebels. The voice. For me, it's all about that voice and the the look of him I'm fine with. And I love, and I think full credit Dave Filoni on this. He's kept his pacing. So it's a little bit of a screw it director. I don't care about your pacing. Like, I'm going to deliver this the exact same way I did the animated series with Rebels. And that for me really helps make that immediate transition.
Yeah, he's a terrifying presence, and I enjoy him immensely.
Yeah, it's great. The music. Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted
to
note...
And I enjoyed this Sabine Thrawn meeting. That was just so fraught. I thought was really well done, where they'd been chasing each other for years.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is a place where, obviously, if you've watched Rebels, those two have, you know, interacted or at least crossed paths in the past. So it's kind of fun to have him be all... You know, oh, it's so nice to see a familiar face. Sabine's like, you know,
yeah,
eat crap.
And I mean, and there's the whole, you know, he cuts Sabine a deal, and you're like, is this legit? What is going on? Right?
Right. But that's very Thrawn, right? Like, he's always like, he is. I mean, without being too, you know, trite about it, he is 10 steps ahead, and he is making these deals, and he's got ideas about it. But you know, Baylan Skull's made this deal about finding Ezra, and essentially what we learn is that Ezra may be out there somewhere. Thrawn says he may also be dead, and that Sabine is given basically a mount and told where, and provisions, and told where Ezra last was seen, and is let to go on her merry way. But then we also learn that Baylan and Shin are going to follow her and apparently try to kill both her and Ezra, because the Night Sisters are not super happy about Sabine being a loose thread either.
Yes. Well, let's... and this may not be the best time to talk about, but I found it very interesting, the comparing and contrasting the Night Sisters' take on Sabine and her decision versus Ahsoka's take on Sabine. So I think there's a lot of interesting questions about free will and destiny in this, some ways. Because, so hear me out here, right? In Ahsoka's mind, she was absolutely convinced that, essentially, that I think Sabine made the wrong decision, right? That Sabine had the chance to prevent all this from happening. But in some ways, like, Sabine going is the loose thread that's going to untangle something that the Night Sisters didn't see, and the sort of the broader calling of, did Sabine, I feel like Hu Young said something about, like, was this the choice Sabine had to make?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if either of you guys picked up anything there of just sort of like, well, Ahsoka perhaps being slightly too linear in her thinking here.
Yeah, or she felt that like this was the wrong choice, and he suggested that perhaps it was the choice. Yeah, that there is something inherently Sabine being true to her nature in choosing this thing, and therefore there is a legitimacy in it because it is the choice that she believed she should make, even if Ahsoka thinks it's the wrong choice. But it is interesting, right? There is a certain degree of fate, free will. These are things that, you know, the Star Wars series has touched on in the past without always really going too hard. Right? Because, like, we see people throw around destiny a lot. Like, oh, it's your destiny to do this. It's your destiny to do that. And a lot of times those are things that don't come to pass, right? Like, you must join me together. That will be your destiny. We will rule the galaxy as father and son. And he's like, I don't want to do that.
Well, it's also the Night Sisters clearly have foresaw this, right? So they have some ability of foresight. And I think Baylan Skull also had some of that.
Mm-hmm.
And right, that's the whole question of how can you have that? So fundamentally reviewing different possibilities and putting things in motion. And it's also cool, too, we finally figured out how Elspeth made it out here in water connection with Thrawn, and that she was sent visions across the universes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so ties in with the Force.
And there's...
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I think this episode was interesting. There's still some stuff where it's like, I'm nervous about, we're at episode 6 out of 8, and it feels like you're just starting to set stuff up. Right?
Yeah, this was my comment to Kat, without getting too far ahead of ourselves, was that this to me was like, this should have been episode 4, maybe, out of 8, or 3 out of should 6, have been possibly.
Before the halfway point, not after.
Yeah.
But there is some interesting stuff with all the kind of tension of the different things that people are doing, even the people that seem nominally aligned, in that, you know, the Night Sisters seem to have an arrangement with Thrawn. Mm-hmm. But you have to imagine that they're not, like, you know, yeah. I don't know. I don't think Thrawn, and it seems like the Night Sisters kind of have more power in that, like, they have a temple and the ability to send messages, and Elspeth, who's seems to be the most together person among the disarray of the Imperials, is perhaps more allied with them than with Thrawn. We don't know. We didn't really hear a lot from Elspeth in this episode in terms of, like, what do you do now that you've figured out your quest is done, right? Or at least part one of your quest. So we've got that, like, I assume the Night Sisters are going to go back with Thrawn. We've got the kind of tension between the mercenary former Jedis and what they want to do. And we get some really interesting ideas here from Baylan Skrull about, like, what's going on or what he thinks should be happening.
One understated thing that I thought about afterwards, because it's right there, but it's not something that gets a lot of attention. Thrawn and they like load up a bunch of stuff onto the Star Destroyer.
I was wondering this too.
What is that?
They say 3 days.
Yeah, they say they have 3 days worth of stuff to bring out of this ancient temple, and they've got that amazing visual of, like, a Star Destroyer docked with a temple. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, what do you keep in a temple other than, like, corpses
treasure? But why would you need that? Like, if it were something useful in that context, they would have used it, right? If it were provisions or something, like,
I assumed Army of the Undead.
I think it's some sort of spiritual woman tied with the Dathomir, with the Night Sisters, because I think it also in Baylan Skrull says, like, the Night Sisters are fleeing this planet. There's something here that they are afraid of, right? So they're currently trying to decamp and go to the other universe, and with them taking, I think, whatever this grand bargain is they have.
Right.
There's some weird stuff going on in all this.
It's something that Thrawn notably wants, but seems to believe, I think, will have some advantage for him, right, strategically, in terms of this campaign he's going to wage. So there's something of power there. We just don't know what it is.
And maybe it's just like, well, we want 3 days so that Sabine and Ezra can have 2.5 days of adventure before it's time to leave. But I hope that there was, like, a suggestion of, like, something of scale versus, like, the MacGuffin, right? Mm-hmm. You know. And, you know, again, if Thrawn is very scary as this spooky Imperial boogeyman, but he would be perhaps a lot more kind of credible as a real threat to the nascent Republic if he had a giant army with him. More than a Star Destroyer that has limited,
I know a planet value. Where he can get a fleet of Star Destroyers with the ability to blow up other planets.
What is this in reference to?
They're just floating out there, like 100 Star Destroyers.
Yeah, the Lost Fleet.
I was thinking of Rise of Skywalker with that.
Rise of Skywalker. Who's on those ships again?
Let's not relitigate Rise of Skywalker.
No.
So Sabine goes in search of Ezra, has a fight with some bandits where she fights a bunch of people and eventually has to pull her
felt
lightsaber.
A little bit like the Dungeon Master has rolled on the random encounter table.
Yes. But they're very much like samurai bandits. I did appreciate some very heavy samurai imagery here. And it was cool, too, to see Sabine again being a very competent fighter.
Yeah, I like Sabine's mount. I mean, it was clearly CGI, but it had that, like,
personality.
This looks like something that came out of the Creature Workshop kind of look to it, right? You know,
I enjoyed it, and I enjoyed that. First of all, it ends up running away at the first fight, and then it slinks back. And they had some great little comedic bits where it, like, goes after her, and she's like, "Nope," and then it turns out, because it looks very ferocious, right? That, like, it's all like growly and has sharp teeth, and then it just turns out to be a big puppy dog. I actually thought they did a great job with that creature. I had an emotional response to it, which what you're kind of going for. Speaking of which, Kat, you want to say something?
No, I think you're about to talk about the little people,
Naughty.
Interestingly, because we watched with subtitles, they and the same the bandits were speaking the same language, according, I think, to the captions.
So the captions claimed, so we get these little, like, turtle people who, like, live in shells.
Turtles! What are they called? Kappas? What are they in Nintendo?
Which one? You're thinking of Koopas. Yeah.
Kappas are another turtle-like thing from Japanese mythology, so.
That's right, yes.
they basically, you know, Sabine convinces them that she doesn't mean any harm and she keeps the Howler away from them. So they decide she's a friend, and then they reveal they know Ezra. And so they lead her to their village where she is reunited with Ezra. We finally see Ezra Bridger. We get Thrawn and Ezra in this episode.
Yeah.
I did not like this reunion.
I know you had strong feelings.
One, I don't think they were emotional or excited enough. Like, literally, you just came across the galaxy, potentially unleashed Thrawn. And then two, other people part of the show too, that I hate plots that are driven by the idea that people don't communicate.
Yeah.
Yes. It was like, oh my God, tell them that Thrawn is here. Potentially Thrawn has a way to go back. And like, there's so much you could tell him that you clearly, like, were this an actual interaction, you would totally tell him. But instead, we need to build some tension between you two, and we don't want to wrap it up in this episode. So it's going to happen next episode.
Yeah, I saw it less about...
That bothers me. That bothers me.
I saw it less about creating tension than it was... I think they're going to address it very quickly, is my guess. But I also think that the pacing was such that they're like, oh, we're out of time. We're out of time this week.
It just felt like an awkward way... it felt like, you know, it was that I can't tell you now versus like, well, it all started when, and then fade to black or something, right? You know, it just, I don't know.
Or just broaching the immediate news like, sorry, I let them find Thrawn and he's going to go back to our galaxy. So we need to, you know, get on the road here.
But yeah, like,
and
like,
I let's don't hang have a out and, for us.
Let's hang out and have lunch first or something. I don't know. It's, you know, like, and I don't know. There's some interesting, what have you been up to in the past many years, Ezra? You're living with turtles. Somebody suggested he's wearing like a shirt that may be like made out of Stormtrooper dog tags. You know, he's kind of, I guess, been living on the run on this planet that's not particularly hospitable. So, yeah. Seems to be doing well for many years of isolation with people that don't speak common, I guess. Maybe he has a very important relationship with those turtles and everything's great.
And again, we know he has a strong force connection to all creatures, so maybe they all get along. Yeah, it felt much more like a reunion, like, oh, we haven't seen each other in a month. Of like, it's probably been nearly a decade.
We know it's been about 9 years, yeah.
We thought everyone was dead, and I was not expecting you to actually finally get here.
But he's got
the force. And by the way, I don't know a way to get home.
He's got the, you know, but he has the force, right? He can tell, like, that's part of, I feel like that's part of his, he hasn't quite full on Obi-Wan here, but like, he has that sort of like, I knew I could count on you. I knew you would show up eventually. You know, sort of somewhat calmness, I think, that the Jedi's exude.
You were the chosen one!
Yeah, ideally. But yes, it certainly opens up a lot of stuff that we're going to talk about in the subsequent episode, yeah. I am sure.
Yeah.
And to wrap this up, I think we basically...
Have we finished the recap yet?
They realize that Ahsoka is coming. Thrawn realizes Ahsoka is coming and wants to know everything about her from Elsbeth, and basically tells people kill any of the Purgles that are showing up. And then, as we mentioned, Skull has this conversation with Hati about, like, there's power here. We're going to find
the cycle.
It. Yeah. They may be making a deal with the mercenaries or the bandits that Sabine ran into.
I hope there is a satisfying conclusion to the what is his deal, because it seems I'm just worried that he's just gonna get like shot in the back of the head by Thrawn next episode to show us that Thrawn's like a bad guy, and it's like, yes, I know Thrawn's a bad guy, because he, you know, he has some interesting things to say in this episode, and especially it's him not talking to Ahsoka or Sabine but to Hati, and you know, like, yeah, you know, I am something else. I heard people, like, I think our pal Guy English speculated that, you know, in the classic Force Trinity, that he might represent the Father in terms of neither light nor dark, but something else in between.
I could see that.
Yeah, I mean, he, and to me, there's a lot of, like, And I mean, the answer is, I guess this conversation is happening for us, the viewers, but it's like, what? Because Shin Hadi seems to keep like asking questions. So I was like,
yeah, how does she not know this?
Yeah, did this not come up in week one of whatever weird student instructor dynamic you've got here? Because she's like, you know, she's wasn't I trained as a Jedi? And I was like, no, you weren't. I totally did something different.
I did my own thing.
Yeah, I agree with you. There were a couple questions of like, Shin, for someone who's supposed to be amazing, like, you're asking some very, like, did you not read the contract, my friend?
Well, to be fair, Jedi faculty, notoriously bad instructors. Everything's got to be, like, a cryptic thing. Everything is, you know,
like false choices.
Okay. Yeah,
you're asking a lot of questions about my orange lightsaber that are answered by my orange lightsaber.
Yeah, so...
part of me kind of wants the all this to be essentially that everyone goes back to the original universe except for Baylan, who stays on this planet and has his entirely own show about like resurrecting something that we don't hear or see of for like three seasons until he comes back.
Just like a real slow archaeology montage.
Yes,
maybe he'll just take Ezra's spot in the village and like, hang out with the turtle people and like build stuff. And
I feel like he has strong "I'm going to get shot in the back of the head" by Thrawn or eaten by the elder god that I unearth from here energy. I don't think he's coming out on top at the end of this series.
I hope. I like him a lot. I think he is super, I think we talked in the last episode, like he is the most interesting character, and it would be a real shame if we lost him.
I mean,
you know. I know the actor has passed away and that's very sad, and then the question is what do they then do with the character?
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see whether or not his arc is ended here. I saw some speculation just sort of looking at, you know, patterns and stuff, having Shin Hadi take sort of a Mara Jade role in like essentially, you know, having Baylan be sort of the emperor to her Mara Jade, and essentially like she is, if he dies, she is like, you know, goes to seek revenge on Ezra maybe or something, and then they have to like team up. You know, who knows? I think it does feel like we're setting up Shin Hadi a lot, and my question of it is like whether she has more depth here or she's just a throwaway character that's going to get lightsabered in the gut at some point.
Yeah, I think you can kill off Shin before you kill off Baylan Skoll. I think she is very... They have not spent a lot of time building her character. She's like Horatio to Hamlet, right? She's just there to ask questions to explain what's going on.
Yeah.
She almost killed Sabine. Like 40% of the way killed Sabine.
Twice.
you know?
yeah, so I mean, I think this episode is really good looking. I said to Kat, I think this is my favorite episode so far. It felt very Star Wars-y to me in a way that some of the previous ones have not. I love the interactions with the Na'ti and with the Howler. Everybody's a little more dynamic. There's stuff happens. Like, we meet characters. There's cool visuals. Like, to me, this is kind of what I wanted out of this show in the first place. And I think it struggled a little bit. Honestly, I don't want to be too critical of, you know, like Rosario Dawson's performance, because I think it's good, but Ahsoka is fundamentally kind of a static character in these first several episodes, and that's kind of tough to get into the, like, let's go, you know? And so having Sabine at the heart of this, I think, helps move things along. Not to mention, I think Natasha Liu Bordizio, if I pronounced her name correctly, she's really good. I think she is the closest for me of, like, of channeling her animated counterpart in some ways. Like, the Sabine performance really works for me in such that, like, I don't have the disconnect with her that I have with some of the other characters who've made the jump from animation to live action.
I don't know if this is my favorite episode. I guess I haven't thought too deeply about that. I do appreciate the intentionality with which this episode kind of like moves and stuff happens in ways that previous episodes felt like you're taking a long time to set up the table here. And I give it strong marks for that looking like Star Wars thing, especially, you know, and I think that's a big criteria by which I look at a lot of the Star Wars TV, is I would like you to look like Star Wars in a recognizable way, but not be retreading Star Wars that I've seen. Tatooine. So this I thought was great in terms of it, you know, stuff looks like Star Wars, but also we're on a planet we've never seen before. These stormtroopers are all weird. We've got a new beast that's being ridden. There's bandits. Everything feels Star Wars-y while also being these are things you haven't seen before. And that's what I want from my new Star Wars is be Star Wars, but new Star Wars, please.
I agree with both those things. At one point, even when we're watching, I joked to Dan, it'd be hilarious if the planet it shows up to is actually Tatooine. It's kind of like everything goes to the gift shop, does everything yeah. goes to Tatooine. But yeah, I agree. I think for me right now, the most interesting thing about this is Thrawn, Bail and Skull, and the Night Sisters. Again, I think, Dan, you captured it well. They are the most dynamic. They're the ones currently moving things forward. They have a plan they're going to execute. Sabine found Ezra. Like, it's just... other than Thrawn and the Night Sisters, there's no sense of urgency in my mind. Mm-hmm. And I find myself just wanting more scenes with Bail and Skull. Because he's a weirdo and I love him, and also just Thrawn of like, I want to know his machinations. So yeah, I really enjoyed it. I again agree. Also wish this had been way earlier. There was that one episode that lasted 17 minutes that maybe we could have just like smushed to other episodes, but, there's a reason I'm not in Hollywood.
Cause they're on strike. We should probably talk about some mail cause we have much mail.
Yes.
Let me start with. Let's start with some Mastodon mentions. Mac Geek writes in about ROUSs. That is all. I guess that's our howlers or our noti. I don't know. They're both sort of interesting creatures. Daniel writes in and said, brief Ahsoka episode 6 thoughts. This one was a tricky one for me. It feels like it's going to be a while to figure out if I liked it or not. Three things I'm sure of, though. Ray Stevenson is amazing in this role. Which we all agree.
Yes, we agree.
David Tennant is a treasure. I agree. I think David Tennant has actually done some really great work here.
I agree too.
And then she said that comedy music in Sabine's scene completely pulled me out of the show. I don't agree with that. I kind of enjoyed it. And honestly, Star Wars is goofy and that's okay.
Star Wars is very serious and should be taken serious at all times.
Matt writes, thank you.
I represent the third way.
Oh, you're the father. Okay.
What is the third way, Tony?
Star Wars is different things. Different things.
Yeah, that's the Taco Bell way.
Biting satire at all times.
Matt writes, thank you all so much. I love the show. Look forward to listening to your discussion each week. As someone who doesn't have all the backstory from non-live action Star Wars, I've appreciated the context you provide. Likewise, I thought I would offer up this YouTube channel that fills in a lot of gaps for me without any spoilers. Keep up the great work. I haven't been able to watch this video, though I did like what I skimmed through at one point they made that I did not catch because we watched on a very small screen, as Kat mentioned. Thrawn's uniform is like tattered. Around the edges, like it's all frayed and everything, which I kind of...
Tony mentioned that.
Yeah, I was. Oh, it's a great point. Like, I mean, we get
it's
the idea.
It's still perfectly white, yes. But it's like the texture has broken down.
The threads have got... Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah. It reminded me, it made an interesting parallel to Andor, where we have, and I've totally forgotten the character's name, our really insistent weirdo who eats cereal, Cyril Karn. Cereal said it for me. That's how my mnemonic works. Who has tailored his own uniform. Like, you know, clothes say a lot, right? Costumes are important. And I'm glad that they emphasize that here.
Yeah. It seemed like to that point, I think the crew of this, I think, had a lot of fun thinking through what does Thrawn look like after 9 years? And that, it really shows. They seemed like the set dressers and everyone.
Rick writes, love this episode. Do you think some of Thrawn's stormtroopers are Night Sister zombies? They look beat up in the golden places. It's very Night Sister. Also reminds me of the Japanese method to repair a broken ceramics called Kintsugi. Looking forward to the show. Thank you all. Rick, I don't know if we stole that from you, but it's great points all the way through, and we clearly agree.
Thanks.
Stuart writes, still struggling to get through the early episodes of Ahsoka. Some delights, but the direction seems a little loose. Dialogue patchy. Hat tip to Hu Yang, though. And I'm struggling with some of the live adaptations, especially Hera. In your opinions, has the show so far gained in strength or merely maintained its course? Either way, love, love, love your podcast.
Yeah, I also struggle with Hera, which is hard because she's one of my favorite characters. But I don't know what it is. I haven't spent enough time thinking about it. But yeah, I think the show is getting better. That's fair.
Yeah, I think I find the Hera distracting, if only because it was one of the actresses I feel like I knew from other things, and part of that was like a harder clash in my head. And yeah, it's tricky. I think part of it is also I saw her as older than I think she's played here, because she has a very like a part of that is attitude, right? Like in Rebels, she is very much the mom of the group. And like mm-hmm. she has a maturity to it, and like she brings an adult thing in the way that like the rest of the characters are all like, I want to fly off and do this thing, and Hera's always like, you got to think this through. And like I think it's, you know, in some ways in my head, I think maybe I had envisioned her as a slightly older. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I agree. I think the early episodes were trickier, and I agree the direction is a little all over the place. I liked some of the minimalism and the samurai stuff, but I think it just needed to be tightened up and condensed, which is always my refrain when it comes to like TV shows where I feel like they spend too much time. Just tighten it. Throw out all the, kill those darlings, throw out all the extraneous stuff. Get to your point. Yeah.
But this is one where I feel like fundamentally, yeah, get to your point, but then like add more points because there needs to be more content, right? I want there to be more dialogue or more exposition or more just like depth. I fundamentally want more depth and nuance in all my shows.
Switch to emails. You can email us, of course, at acp@theincomparable.com. James writes, we've had space whales and space cats, space worms, the Exogorth, space slug technically, space bats, Minox, space foxes, Vulptuses, and porgs.
Wait, what are the space foxes?
Aren't they the Last Jedi
the crystal
ones?
Planets?
The crystal foxes?
Oh, I love those. Those were so cute. They did not franchise those guys enough. Yeah.
Technically, it's very just an issue of parallel evolution. Those things are closer to crabs than to foxes. No.
I was going to say, they tried to merchandise them, but
that's
very
canon.
They were very sharp, and people kept cutting themselves.
I want one of the fancy ice makers of and have like I'd be a fox.
The challenge is each toy is made out of several diamonds, and so they're very expensive.
James wants to know, what space animal would you like to see in the Star Wars universe? Thank you very much, and let me tell you how much Gmail's autocorrect algorithm hates Star Wars. This simple email was exhausting.
Oh, that's a good question.
Space red pandas. So, I mean, I guess that's Ewoks, basically.
Yeah.
Space corgis.
Are space corgis and space porgs not porgies? Mm-hmm. They're not the same.
Ooh, okay, fair question. Fair point.
What's the closest we have to a space pigeon?
aren't there bird creatures somewhere?
Probe droids or the little spy droids?
Do we have any creatures that are indigenous to Coruscant that have somehow carved out an evolutionary niche there? That would be,
Minox, right?
Well, we mentioned space bats. What about space rats?
Space rats.
Womp rats.
Yeah.
But they're 2 meters long, guys. That's...
Well, there's so much...
unusual size.
There's so much to eat in Beggar's Canyon. They grow up to be that size.
Beggars
so.
Can't be All choosers right. Canyon.
Let me ask this question. What is the silliest or goofiest animal on Earth?
Oh, on Earth?
On Earth?
Yeah, let's start with that. And that's I want the space version
not
of that.
Not the platypus?
Giraffe.
I picture a space... You know what a space giraffe is? It's a Kaminoan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Questions.
Great questions that we are unqualified to answer. Another James, a different James, writes, Dear Dan, Kat, and Tony, love the show, and this has only the most tangential connection, but Ahsoka prompted me to dig out my copy. I read this, and this is actually for me. Ahsoka prompted me to dig out my copy of Heir to the Empire for the first time in a while, and as I was reading the first couple of chapters, the super stealthy Republic spy Paige rang some bells, and I wondered if there was any possible connection to other super stealthy spies named Paige in other literary science fiction series. All the best, James. James.
Yes.
Gold Star. I finally get caught after like six years of reading books. Kat saying she knew. She's gesturing that she figured it out. I will say,
come on, Paige's Commandos.
if you enjoy that, check out Talon Card's right hand man's name. And that's all I'll say about that.
What's his name?
I'm not giving it away. Someone can do the research.
Oh god, Wikipedia is such a pain to navigate.
Just Google it. Peter writes, hello, nerds. Were you guys aware of the Hati and Skull references to Norse mythology?
I did. They're wolves, I believe.
Yeah, they're basically wolf gods that chase the sun and moon. When I heard the names of our pseudo-Jedi Siths, it stuck out to me. Do you think there's any symbolism going on here? Do these people have anything to do with Loth wolves, particularly one towards the end of Rebels that Ezra could communicate with? Thanks for doing the show. I enjoy it. Peter, I'll take that and I'll raise you one. Marak is also a character from Arthurian mythology who is basically turned into a wolf by Morgan Le Fay, not to be confused with Morgan Elsbeth. So, I think you could clearly say, yes, this is 100% Dave Filoni playing with Norse mythology. What that means, anybody's guess, other than Dave Filoni loves wolves.
Yeah. And Star Wars characters have goofy names.
Also true. Yeah. That they just, I mean, Darth Vader is basically like Dark Father, yeah, essentially. Yeah. Like, come on.
Yeah.
Joe writes in, subject line, what does Balin want? Great question, Joe. I haven't watched all the animated shows, so lack some of the context they all have. Can you tell yet, what does Balin want? Whatever he wants seems to be somewhat of a mystery to Shin at this point, too. Also not sure what she wants, other than perhaps to learn the Force from a master, but what might her longer-term goal be? Great question. We don't know. I still think, my theory is still that he is trying to basically wipe out all the Jedi and Sith and start the whole thing again. Because he talks about like the cycle that keeps happening, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then like he wants to interrupt it. What that means, I don't know. But
also
not that
given that we know
we've seen elsewhere,
there are movies that exist later. The cycle still seems to be going great.
So they're probably not going to do it. But one potential description of what is the source that is there and a cycle to like restart. Now I forget the name of the planet. The planet where the father, the son, and the daughter were on that are they're killed. Mortis, right? Is it possible? That's not where they're from. The father moved everyone to Mortis to keep them out of the world, the galaxy, because they're too dangerous. It's possible it could be the source of Mortis.
Or New Mortis.
I don't know.
Yeah, it could be. Maybe there is something primeval there.
Or maybe he wants to destroy the Force once and for all.
Oh, that's a bold choice.
Yeah, because the Force is inside all of us, all of the things.
Oh, let's just kill everybody.
That's where I keep my stuff.
Stop keeping your stuff inside yourself.
Also, I can't find the name of Talonkar's right-hand man. What's his name?
I said left as an exercise to the reader. You can ask me off air. You know where I am. All right. Michael writes, hi, Star Wars pals. Love the podcast. I look forward to listening to it as much as watching the shows. My idea for a Star Wars TV series is to follow Ahsoka and Hu Yang as they travel with the Purgles into other galaxies before finding Ezra and Thrawn. For example, the Purgle's mouth opens and we see the Starship Enterprise, then cut to Scotty saying, Admiral, like, there be whales here.
I was like, it gets Star Trek real fast. Yeah. It gets Star Trek.
After a brief adventure with the Star Trek crew lasting between 28 and 47 minutes, they move on with the Purgle into another galaxy. Maybe they end up in the Marvel Universe, team up with the Guardians of the Galaxy, or cross over with the
Quantum Leap. Yeah. It's literally Quantum Leap. Quantum Leap of Space Whales. I love this idea. Man.
Crossover with the Green Lantern Corps. It's a different team up each week. My question is, with celebrities like Jack Black, Lizzo, and Christopher Lloyd appearing on Star Wars TVs, what three random stars would you like to see make an appearance in a future episode of any Star Wars show? May the Force be with you. characters.
Dan is much better at naming celebrities.
I just am going to pick celebrities I thought of off the top of my head. Waterston.
Who is Sam Waterston again? Is that the guy from...
Law and Order.
Law and Order, yeah.
I think he'd be charming.
Mark Rylance, the world's greatest actor. I love Mark Rylance. I will watch anything Mark Rylance is. Folks, if you do not know who Mark Rylance is, the answer is you've seen him in a lot of things. You just don't realize you've seen him in a lot of things because he's so freaking good.
Okay. He does appear to be in a lot of things.
He's amazing. He's so good.
I'm worried that I'm going to name people that have actually already been in bit parts in Star Wars because so many people have been in Star Wars. But my first name that came to mind that I just, because I think I'm leaning wacky today, would be Charlie Day. I would like to see Charlie Day in... Charlie Day is in a lot of comedies. I think he got famous for It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Mm. And he does a lot of comedies and he does a lot of voice acting. So that felt like he could voice some sidekick, alien or monster.
Has he not voiced one in... Okay, no, I was trying to remember. There's some resistance.
Where you tell me that he's in something. I think other people from kind of that...
It's Bobby Moynihan is who it is.
Yeah.
Jim Rash, yeah.
Yeah, so...
Go ahead. I'll get my three next. Yeah.
Do we not? Idris Elba hasn't appeared in Star Wars yet, right?
Oh yeah. I don't really think so.
They got him for so many other things that it feels like a mistake there.
Oversight.
Yeah, like he's in a Fast and the Furious, and he's not in a Star Wars. That's Feels like a mistake.
Should have held out for that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Kat, you're next in the rotation.
Yeah. I would also do Mark Evan Jackson, who was on Brooklyn Nine-Nine and The Good Place, who is Holt's husband and is just... I find him very, very funny and very, very good at deadpan.
He could work for ISB.
Absolutely. Yeah. I want to see him as a slightly incompetent member of ISB.
Yeah.
I was trying to think again, of some other... Yeah.
I just keep thinking of people I've seen on TV recently who are not yet in Star Wars. I think John Hamm could be a charismatic like he's a new senator or governor in the New Republic. Dan is John Hamm already in Star Wars, and I've forgotten
that I know of.
All right.
It's funny because I did have the moment of trying to think of other people I'd seen recently, and my head went to Kerry Russell, and I was like, "Damn it, Kerry Russell was in Star Wars."
Yeah, yeah.
So. She had a kind of thankless role though. In Rise of Skywalker. Who else was I going to throw in there? Oh, there's a lot of there's a lot of really good options. I don't know. I honestly, there are so many good. I'm trying to think of other stuff I've seen.
Tom Hanks is my third one.
Tom Hanks is always Tom Hanks.
Right.
I'm just looking at shows I watch and I'm thinking like, oh, Meryl Streep? Yeah, sure, she'd be great.
She'd be phenomenal.
I can't see Meryl Streep ever doing Star Wars.
I want the cast from Only Murders in the Building. So Martin Short, Steve Martin, and Selena Gomez with Meryl Streep all in, and the guy who doesn't age.
Paul Rudd?
That one, yes.
I think we answered this question and perhaps badly.
I got my third, please.
Okay, go for it.
Guys, you're messing up the rotation. I would go for my third, Frances McDormand, who is possibly in Star Wars and I'm not remembering.
Who's McDormand again?
Frances McDormand from Fargo.
McDormand, yeah, from Fargo and lots of other things. She collaborates. I believe she's married to one of the Coen brothers and is in like half of their movies, but because she's also amazing.
Oh yeah.
You might know her most recently. She was in Nomadland as the main character, as the nomad in Nomadland. She's amazing. I think you could put her in an Andor quality show, which is not something I would say about Charlie Day. No offense to Charlie Day.
Well, if I want Willem Dafoe, just because he's a weird man.
He is.
That's a weird show.
Next question.
Dominic Wright. Sorry. This is my favorite letter of the week. I already read it to Kat because it was too good not to. Dominic writes, confusion. I watched this week's episode and I'm so confused about something from the podcast last week. What's up, dog? Is that something from the extended universe? Thanks. Love the show, Dominic.
Dominic, we love you. We love you so much. So much.
I don't know, ask dog. What's up with you?
Yeah. Okay.
I'm very sorry that you walked right into that, but having somebody hear that joke over email has got to be the best. Oh, bless you.
Yeah.
Bless you.
Also,
thank you. You've made my week.
To deploy that over that joke that has now spanned two episodes. Timing.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
I might never top that.
Yeah, Dan is at his corniest here. I can see like the amount of life energy that is now flowing through his veins. It's like he's gonna go rob a convenience store after this. He is dangerously powerful.
I just feel the Night Sister green mist flowing throughout me.
They usually reserve that for corpses, but for you, such a deal.
It makes me alive. Jay, I think our last letter is from Jay, who writes in the subject line, does the ACP podcast have Piper Awards? Episode 5, spoilerish, don't open if you haven't watched yet. And then this is...
What's up, Piper Award?
Piper Award is an award that we give on BIFF for actors who generally appear in both the DC and Marvel universes, or sometimes other universes. We've expanded to like Star Wars and Star Trek as well. But this is the point that Wes Chatham from The Expanse and Claudia Black from Stargate and Farscape both appear in this week's episode, which is, excellent. I do always enjoy when the sci-fi franchise characters pop in to other franchises. It's pretty great. Mm-hmm. Also, looking at the picture that he sent where he's got like the characters and the actors side by side, the Night Sister face and the gold mask that Enoch wears, there's a vibe. there's definitely a vibe there. So
that's what I think. I think he pinched that from some crypt in that temple somewhere. So
do you think he's alive or dead?
We
didn't get into Enoch, which is a biblical reference about a dude who lived a super long time and then has a whole apocryphal Bible book that's weird. But yeah, there's a lot going on there.
I don't know. I mean, so are we positing a scenario where like Thrawn is the only one alive on his ship that's full of zombies?
Possible.
You think he'd have one guy. Enoch did have actual dialogue. Yes. He has dialogue.
Well, the other ones have
the other. They have chants. They chant.
A chant on command. Yeah. Again, I don't know if it's alive or dead, but I still argue if you're hiring Wes Chatham for that role, you've got to take off that helmet at least once.
Yeah, why would you?
He might be incredibly disfigured or a zombie of some sort, but like,
yeah, it
why
seems
would
like,
you hire that person if you're going to have him doing that role?
I mean, why would you hire an actor if it's just a stunt role?
Why would you hire Pedro Pascal to play a character for an entire season and never have him
take off the mask?
Not in season three.
Yeah, his voice is still great. Yeah, I tell you I watched the behind the scenes for season 3 of Mandalorian, and Pedro Pascal does not appear in it and is basically not mentioned, and I was like, that's a choice that you're making up. You know, it's like, meh.
I think it is Wes Chatham in that shoot too, because he seems a little shorter than some of the other stormtroopers.
Yeah, it's definitely his build for sure.
Yeah, I would say we could remember also the Night Sisters. You know, I think if anyone is going to tell you that death is a continuum, it would be the Night Sisters, because they do that whole thing with Maul's tribe, where they're not zombies, but they're like infused with green energy, right? So guess what? They could still be alive and be super messed up under that armor.
Yeah.
In case you're wondering, because I just happened to see a screenshot of Thrawn standing next to Captain Enoch. Wes Chatham, 5'11", possibly 6 feet, depending on who you trust.
So not short.
Lars Mikkelsen is 6'4".
Okay, so Lars Mikkelsen is a tall...
He's a very tall man.
Tall man, yes. Yeah. Is Lars Mikkelsen taller than Mads Mikkelsen?
Yes. Mads Mikkelsen is only 6 feet tall, according to Google. Wow.
Although
I have seen a picture of them next to each other, and he's definitely taller.
Mikkelsen facts. Thank you.
Have the two of them ever been in a movie together?
That's an interesting question. I don't know.
They are both in Star Wars now, but not in different Star Wars.
What was Matt Mikkelsen in?
He's Jyn Erso's dad.
Right. That's right. I can think, like, when does he play? He plays a good guy, which is unusual for English-speaking films. He usually plays a bad guy in English-speaking films.
He's still an Imperial, so, you know. he plays a sympathetic character.
I once got into, I think when I was in grad school, I got really into Mads Mikkelsen and watched probably like half of his opus.
Did you watch all of his Danish movies? I've watched three of his Danish movies.
Many of his Danish movies.
Those are intense movies.
Yeah.
So I will say, according to the internet, Mads Mikkelsen was in a Danish procedural called Unit 1. Which was based on real life crimes committed in Denmark. And he's like a cop, you know, has his own task force. But in one episode, they face one particularly adept criminal played by none other than Lars Mikkelsen.
Oh.
I forgot Lars Mikkelsen was in Sherlock, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They've got a lot.
All right, bringing us back to Star Wars. Do we have any other emails or notes or letters? Otherwise, let's make some plugs.
That is the end of our letters. As a reminder, you can reach us at acp@theincomparable.com or find us on Mastodon. We're at zeppelin.flights as @ACP. Please send in your questions, your thoughts, your letters. Apologies for this episode coming out a little bit later. I know we're running up against the next Ahsoka episode dropping, but as Kat and I were traveling, this was the earliest we could record, so hopefully this reaches you before you watch this week's next episode.
Because how will you possibly understand what is going on in the next episode? And also, we sell t-shirts, Priggles and Squigs, at hellonerds.shop. Did I get that right?
Amazing. Yes, for the first time, yes.
For try.
Yes, Kat and I sported our Purgle and Squigs. One member of our family sported a Purgle and Squigs shirt each day at Disney World last week. and nobody ever commented on them. Someone did comment on my Tashi Station shirt, though.
No, someone asked if I was a lawyer. The security guard in Animal Kingdom asked if I was a lawyer, and I was like, no, it's a Star Wars joke. He's like, isn't it a little early in the morning for jokes? It's like, I don't know what's going on.
I think that might be a success that they thought that our shirt passed. Yeah, I think that's what, I think that works. So
are Perkle and Squeaks like personal injury lawyers? Are they like space ambulance chasers? I have questions. Anyway, thank you everybody out there for your support and for listening to the show and sending in your mail. We really appreciate it, and we will be back probably later this week with the next episode. So you get two in 1 week. Consider that a bonus. Woo-hoo. But until then, I'd like to thank my co-hosts, as always. Tony Sindelar, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me, nerds.
Kat Benish, always a pleasure.
It's been fun. And everyone, get your COVID booster. Don't get COVID.
That has been a public service announcement. thank you, everybody out there, for listening. We will see you next time. But until then, may the force be with you.